Hi guys, I'm back home again. Well, I mean, I was kind of home last week, except for Scott and we're on the island, but that was home-ish. Speaking of Scott, Scott has gone back to England. So he is back on the other side of the world to what is almost their summer, which I guess is not too bad. Mind you, I mean, I'm here joking about the weather. I am, for those of you watching the video, sitting here wearing a jumper as well, because now it's weird down to 19 degrees, which is getting really, really harsh for here. I'm also tennis attired. So I have been out this morning playing tennis with my kids, which is nice. We do that before they go to school on a Friday. So, you know, look, it's still a really nice time of year here. We're out. Well, in fairness, like every time of year is a nice year. So we're always out there. Outdoors, just the environment for it. Now, on the Scott thing. So Scott's back in the UK. I will be going over to the UK in only about a week and a half now. So I'm going Monday after next. The things I'm doing over that side of the world, what am I doing? I'm going to an awards night, SC Computing. We've got an awards night where Report URI has been nominated for an award. So we're going to go over and do that. Scott's going to be there. I'll be joining him. Apparently, I've got to get dressed up, which is an unusual thing for me. I haven't been dressed up literally since last year. So I'm going to actually have to pull a suit out. So that'll be fun. Going to do that. Excuse me. I am then speaking at the InfoSec EU conference the day after. So this is Wednesday. Let me just check for those of you who are over the UK direction. Wednesday 6, be speaking at InfoSec EU. I will be doing a bunch of Pluralsight things the next couple of days as well. So meeting a whole heap of Pluralsight customers, which will be fun, before I head off to Oslo for NDC Oslo. And if you are anywhere in the proximity of NDC Oslo, that is still like the number one event every year that I go to. So I've been going to there since 2014 now, and it's just like the one thing where I'm like, yeah, of course I'll go. It's the other side of the world, but yeah, why not? So I'll be doing a few of these weekly updates from other places after next week. Next week, we'll still be here. Now, this is also only the second time I have done this with the lights. So I hope that this is looking good. I sort of did it and then Scott was here and we were outdoors and stuff and I didn't think about it for a while. So if you have any lighting feedback, look at my face now. I think it works okay. I mean, the hat probably doesn't help with the shadows and things. But I think it's mostly right. Any feedback, you do let me know. I think I'm coughing from all this cold weather. 19, geez. Moving on. On to other things. This week, I spent a day at a bank down in Australia. So on Wednesday, I went down to Sydney. We have what we casually refer to as the top four or the big four banks in Australia. I went to one of them, which was Westpac. And I spent a day there. Speaking to people, in fact, I did the same talk three times over for Scams Awareness Week. And I spoke to, I think in total, they said around about 1,000 people. I think it was about 700 something in person, and then the rest of them were on webinars. So I did the same talk a few times over. And it's just really interesting to go into different places and see how they behave. And you know, what I mean by that, it's not like, you know, are the Westpac people well behaved? It's seeing what are the things that they are interested in? What are the challenges they have? What are the sorts of questions people at a place like a big bank want to ask? And, you know, I've been into a bunch of different banks around the world lately, and it's really sort of interesting to see the trends and the themes. But it's also a way of getting me out of what is ultimately a place where you can end up with cabin fever very quickly. And what I mean by that is I sort of sit here and I do my own thing. I do these videos talking at a camera. There's like no one else around. I write my blog post, do the Have I Been Pwned stuff. So the opportunities to actually get out and see people are totally awesome. And I really appreciate Westpac having had me down to Sydney for that. So that was my Wednesday. Now, moving on to other things. One of the big things that's happened over the last week is the Pwned Password service in Have I Been Pwned has really, really taken off. And just to put this in a little bit of context, I'm going to bring some stats up here. I was talking recently about how it was sort of hitting a million requests a day, which was pretty cool. And I'm looking at my graph, and like Friday was a million, Friday last week, Saturday a million, Sunday a million, Monday a million, Tuesday was now about 3 million. and then 4 million, and then 5 million. And yesterday was 5.15 million requests to pwned passwords. So I'm seeing this graph is just like massively up and to the right. Now, of course, this is to the API. So this is services consuming the API, then people coming along using those services and making hits out to pwned passwords. There are several things that have happened to really, really drive this adoption. And I'm going to talk about those, and then I'm going to read you comments from the Daily Mail because they're freaking awesome. Trust me, this will be fun. So the things that have happened in what I think is chronological order. EVE Online. So I've spoken about EVE Online before, the massive online gaming platform. EVE Online has integrated pwned passwords. They have given me some great stats as well on things like how many requests per day, what percentage of people doing things like changing their passwords are actually choosing bad passwords. Now, with their permission, I'm going to share those in a blog post hopefully next week because I think that's really interesting to sort of see what happens in terms of the raw numbers. So they've been hitting it a heap of times. Only a small portion of the 5 million a day, though. The other thing that's happened is we have had 1Password launch version 7 for Mac, and built into that, and this was only a couple of days ago, by the way, built into that, into the Watchtower feature, is the ability to just check your entire keychain of passwords against have I been pwned, and specifically the pwned passwords API. Now, of course, keep in mind, this is all using the k-anonymity model, so I'm never seeing other people's passwords from 1Password. I'm just seeing the first 5 characters of a SHA-1 hash. And there's a huge amount of information out there on my blog and also from Cloudflare about k-anonymity and why that gives a huge amount of protection to the original password. So they've come online. Inevitably, they're making a bunch of requests as people install the client for Mac. If you're like me and you're on a PC, I believe that the PC version of 1Password 7 lands next week as well. So once I get that hitting my desktop, I might even put that in the blog post that I'm writing up about pwned password usage. So that's cool. Inevitably, a lot of people are using that. And I did find myself, when I use the online version, so 1Password will often sort of seed new features into the online version because it's just a website. You update the website, everyone sees it. It's a bit easier for them to seed stuff there than to push it out to every single client. So I have used the one on the online version, and I did find multiple passwords within my keychain which were in pwned passwords. And at the time, I said, look, this is a combination of things like throwaway accounts that I've done just for testing and blog posts and things I've written. So there was that. There were accounts where you are mandated to have like a PIN. Hello, airlines and many banks. And I just remembered one other thing that I've got to talk about here as well. Yeah, that's a bad one. I'll come back to that. So a lot of them have PINs. And, you know, like no matter what you do, you cannot create a strong password that is a PIN. It will almost certainly be in pwned passwords. Incidentally, there are some PINs, 4 and 6-digit PINs, which are not in pwned passwords. And I actually thought about, should I just put them in there just for the sake of completeness? And then I went, well, the two reasons why I don't want to do that. Number one is that at the moment, pwned passwords is passwords that have appeared in data breaches that I've then been able to aggregate. I don't want to then go, yeah, and I also made some stuff up. It just doesn't fit well with me, sit well with me. Over time, I'm sure those gaps will be filled in. The other thing is that when it comes to PINs, no one in their right mind, except for airlines and banks, I'll come back to that actually, because it's an interesting insight on it. No one else in their right mind is going to allow anyone to create a password that is just a PIN. That is one of the complexity rules you do want to have. No, you can't just have 4 or 6 numbers. So I don't feel that's necessary. Now, the final category is I did have some accounts from when I originally rolled over to 1Password in 2011, which had bad passwords. And those bad passwords were my fault. You know, like I am willing to admit that in the past, I have had some crap passwords, and so have you. And we all have to admit that and then move on and do better things. So anyway, it was interesting that some of mine did come up. So if you're a 1Password user, it's just worthwhile going, hey, just throw my keychain at this, see what comes back. Now, I wanted to go back to the PIN thing for a moment because it reminded me of a discussion I was having with the CISO of the bank at Westpac the other day. So he introed me on a couple of the talks and we kind of hung out for a bit. And I said, look, it was kind of funny. funny, coincidental that a few people just before I went to Westpac had pinged me on Twitter and they said, hey, Troy, look at Westpac's password requirement policy. Isn't it terrible? Because they've got things like restriction of characters and length and no spaces or something of that degree. I can't remember exactly what it was. And I get a lot of people contact me about this. And I was having this discussion with the guy and I sort of said, look, I reckon there are two different ways of looking at this. One way is that the password strength criteria or the allowable passwords are like the veneer of the application, right? So this is what people see. If you go to a website and it says you can't have apostrophes, it's not a good look. If you go to a website and you can't have letters, it's definitely not a good look. If it limits you to 10 characters, it's not a good look. All of these things are not a good look, and this is what people see because it is the veneer. It is the top layer of everything. So on the one hand, like the perception side of things is not good when you do that. On the other hand, the likes of banks, large e-commerce sites, social media sites like Facebook or Twitter, authentication for them is not just matching an email address and a password from the user to what they have in the database. There is a huge amount of stuff that goes into authentication, a huge amount of heuristics about the trustworthiness of the user, the normal behavior, the legitimacy of the IP address, the browser, the geolocation if it's a mobile client. There's all sorts of things that go into fraud detection. And again, sort of looking at it in two ways, we can say on the one hand, look, banks are actually very, very resilient, even the ones that just have PINs. On the other hand, I do wish that they would fix that veneer because this is what people see. And at the end of the day, they're going to stand there and go, there's a lot of really good stuff that happens under the covers to help protect you. Just trust us. And they're right. But wouldn't it be nice if they fixed that veneer? And we went to the bank and we went, yeah, I can actually have a really strong password. But legacy reasons and so on and so forth. How did we get there? We were talking about passwords and 1Password. That's right. So 1Password is using pwn passwords. That's gone really well. Now, the one that I knew was coming, but it was just like someone pinged me and went, hey, we're going to build a thing with your API. And I was like, yeah, sweet, go for it. And I didn't realize how big it would be, was Okta. Now, Okta has built an integration into pwn passwords, which is a browser plugin. Runs in your browser. When it observes a password field and you put a password into that field, it can come back and tell you whether it has appeared in pwn passwords. This is a simple, simple, simple little implementation, but it has had a huge amount of press. And I don't think that they've kind of, it's not like they've done all the press releases and media statements and kind of coordinated everyone. It's just something which, a bit like pwn passwords itself, is simple, but somehow it's just hit a niche and it's just spread massively. So I've seen media all over the place about this, and I've seen a huge amount of tweets about it. I get Google alerts when I see things like, have I been pwned mentioned online, or when Google sees it mentioned online, and it's just all over the place, and I'm ecstatic about this. And the folks at Okta who built this have just done a wonderful job of taking something very, very simple and building it into what is a valuable functional thing. It's not a password manager. It doesn't compete with 1Password. It doesn't sort of do anything highly complex with cryptography or anything like that. It's just like, oh, there's a password field. There's a string in there. Let's hash it, take the first 5 characters, chuck it to Troy, see what comes back. Happy days. Simple thing. Now, for the most part, that's good. Let's get to the interesting bits. One of the themes that I've seen come up again and again, especially on the Twitters, is people say, isn't it risky installing an extension that can access your password? The thing is, when you install extensions in your browser, you're giving them a huge amount of control. So have a think about the way an extension like this works. Now, I assume, I've not looked at the code, I believe they're open sourcing it. I assume that it is looking for input fields of type password. And then it's looking for probably when you remove focus from the field, it's going to pick that up and go, okay, you've finished typing, let's go and check it. It can do this because it has access to the DOM. When you install extensions, they have access to the DOM. This is the way things like ad blockers work. They look at the DOM and they go, hey, there's an element in there, it's an ad, let's nuke that. They can manipulate requests. So they can send requests, they can block requests, they can rewrite your content security policy. Extensions are enormously powerful. And indeed, we've seen extensions go rogue in the past. There was a bit of a spate of incidents there for a while where an extension would be out there, it'd be reasonably popular. Someone would come along, possibly with a Russian accent, and say, hey, why don't we give you 10 grand or something for this? Whoever wrote the extension is like, sweet, I never expected to make any money. They sell the thing. Extension gets handed over to someone else, goes rogue. Guess what? An extension can do just about anything in your browser. Now, whether the extension is designed to access the password or whether it's designed to do something totally different, but by virtue of running in the browser and having access to the DOM, it can kind of do that anyway. So for people going, this is risky because it can access your password, if you run an ad blocker, you're pretty much in the same category. This is not me saying don't run ad blockers. Don't mistake me on that. But while we're on that, that is me saying, remember, when you do run something like an ad blocker, you are now giving another third party a huge amount of access to what you're doing on the web. So you're kind of shifting your trust a little bit, where you're saying, all right, well, not only do I need to trust Google Chrome, but now I need to trust whoever is actually building this extension. I need to trust they're good today, and I need to trust that they're not going to flip it to someone with the accent later on, and they're going to do some nasty stuff. So people losing their minds a little bit about that. Only a very small amount, though. Not a lot of mind losing over this one. Now let's move on to the other thing, the Daily Mail. Now for those of you who may not be from the UK or have spent time in the UK, the Daily Mail is... Actually, if you're in the UK and you want to explain what the Daily Mail is, leave a comment on the blog. It's a bit of a tabloid rag. I'm looking at the site at the moment, and they're like, let's just say the images down the side are very, very distracting. But be that as it may, Daily Mail wrote about this. And I'm just looking at the comments, because what tends to happen with the Daily Mail is it just draws out the most insane kind of comments and people who you just go like, these people walk amongst us. Who are these people? Now, I haven't read all of these, by the way. We're going to flick through and read a few of them here. I'm going to pick out a couple of the ones here. So, you know, all right, here's a good one. This guy says, so you want us to hand our passwords to a random extension and see if they've been shown up in a breach, and what happens when their database gets breached? You'd have to be brain dead to do that. Just change them regularly. All right, where do we start here? So, first of all, to the discussion about the fact that when you install an extension, it's going to get an access to a lot of your things. Anyway, that's number one. Number two, it doesn't send the password to a random service. It sends a subset of it. It sends the first five characters of the hash. Number three, Okta is, again, I believe, open sourcing this. They're not outsourcing it. Open sourcing this so you can go and see exactly what it's doing. And four, where are we up to? The last thing. This whole thing about changing password regularly, we have well and truly smashed this. So, for example, the NCSC in the UK, where the Daily Mail is, has said, please stop people from doing that. Or rather, please stop enforcing that. Instead, we've got to do smarter things. I wrote a blog post about Authentication Evolved, which takes all of these pieces of guidance from the likes of the NCSC and NIST in the US and explains the things that we thought we should be doing before that we no longer should be doing now. So that's not good. One guy here says, internet always looking for ways to get more personal information. It seems that giving Chrome your password to see if it has been hacked is a really dumb idea. I wonder how many gullible people will fall for this. I will never allow any of my passwords to be stored in an online site. So just to answer his question, the number of people that would fall for this, based on the numbers here, is about 5 million a day, roughly speaking. So to his point, you're giving Chrome your password every time you log in. This is how it works, right? It's like you open Chrome, you go to Amazon or whatever it is, you put your password in, you're giving it to Chrome. Now, Chrome is not sending that back to Google. God, I hope they're not sending it back to Google. That'll be a big problem. We believe they're not sending it back to Google. This is an extension made by a third party. It's not sending it to them, it's sending it to me. It's not sending it to me, it's sending the first five characters of the SHA-1 hash. Now, look, I appreciate also that something like the Daily Mail is a very consumer-centric, consumer-facing tabloid. You're not expecting your average everyday people to understand what a hashing algorithm is. Another one here, Joe. Joe says, oh yeah, right, I'll be rushing right over to install the extension. Can't wait to tell Google my passwords. And then he says, it's not as if they don't have them already. Give me a break. Now, also, these are some of the highest upvoted ones as well. Maybe some of the low ones would be some of the funniest ones. Someone says he's deleted most of the apps on his phone. Someone else says, enter your password now to see if it's been stolen. I guess technically if I give it away, it's not stolen. Fair point. Not touching it with a barge pole. My passwords are very strong already. Thanks. No, they're not, mate. I've seen your passwords. Trust me, they're not good. and I can say that with a fairly high degree of certainty because I've seen a lot of passwords. And, there's more. Jeez, how many passwords comments are there here? Someone else is saying voice passwords and fingerprints will solve all this. Let me find some really funny low rate. Oh, someone's asking, what does pwned mean? Very, very good question. It's probably the best question I've seen on here. So that's interesting. Type in your passwords, really. Who on earth would trust them with that? Are people in the Daily Mail just really cynical? UK friends, is this the way it works? Which is kind of interesting. Man, there's so many comments here where they just think it's like a harvesting scam. Chrome is so weak, every so often it tells me that I've won a prize from my SIP. Can't get rid of it. So apparently this person's Chrome is telling them they've won a prize. If your browser is doing that without going to a website, you've probably got a different problem with your browser. All right, last one. And this one's kind of upvoted quite a bit. And it's a little bit long, but it looks like it'll be interesting. This is nonsense. What is more important, the fact your password has been compromised or the fact your data is in another website has been compromised? The password does not protect the data. All right. The password is simply a means for a website application to verify you are who you claim to be. The hackers don't hack the system using users' passwords. They get in via other routes and steal the data en masse. Sorry, mate, they do get in with people's passwords. It's called credential stuffing. It's a massive problem at the moment. The real question is how much of the user's data in the website apps is encrypted? I think you'll find the answer is not much. Well, he's right there. And so these data breaches that occur, your account password is an irrelevance. If they have the data and it's unencrypted, it doesn't... Yeah, it's just... I think this is just like average, normal, everyday people commenting on the cybers. And that... In fairness, you don't expect average everyday people to understand these things, but there's a lot of tinfoil hattery going on the Daily Mail, apparently. Now, let's move on. The thing I just remembered earlier on that I needed to touch on today as well, whilst we're talking about passwords, is there's a new data breach that's just gone into Have I Been Pwned from South Africa. Now, incidentally, you might have noticed I haven't loaded any data breaches for about 3 weeks. I'm fundamentally rebuilding a lot of stuff under the covers of Have I Been Pwned. And it's a lot to do with the way I process and store data. And there's also some new stuff coming up that's going to be super, super cool, which I don't want to talk about yet because it's going to involve some other third parties as well. But that has meant that I've wanted to effectively not modify the data during this process. And actually, by virtue of loading that South African data, I've now got to go and do some other tricks to make sure that flows into the new structure I'm going to use. Now, like all the stuff I do on Have I Been Pwned, I will write about that very transparently as well. Not just what I'm doing with the data, but all the architecture and technology behind it. And as a sneak peek, it involves a lot of Azure functions. So some of you might have seen me tweeting during the week trying to figure out the pricing of functions. Because when I looked at a process that was running over here and I saw 200 servers running at the same time, I was for a moment there thinking about the conversation I might need to have with my wife about the next bill that comes in from Azure. Now, fortunately, that's not going to be a problem. I've quadruple checked the numbers. I actually checked the numbers with my wife as well, because then if I screwed it up, it like wouldn't be entirely my fault. But I also had feedback from people at Microsoft. The pricing on functions is just insanely good. This is why things like pwned passwords, even at the volumes we're seeing today, are not going to cost me a cent. In fact, the reason they're not going to cost me a cent is because I'm getting up to 99% cache hit ratio on Cloudflare at the moment. So only 1% of that 5 million plus requests are coming through to the origin. When they come through to the origin, because they execute so quickly and functions are charged based on the amount of memory that's being used and the duration that it's being used for, it brings the cost way, 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 way down until it's well beneath the free threshold anyway. So I'll share more stats and figures on that as we progress. All right, so back to the South Africa thing. Now, this was a case where someone popped out of the woodwork, as they often do, sent me an email and said, hey, I'm John Smith or equivalent from South Africa. I've found some data. linked me to a website which often shares data, not the one many of you are thinking of that starts with R, different one altogether. And it was nearly a million records worth of data. And we weren't sure exactly what it was originally. So I ended up connecting the guy that found it with the reporter that I worked with last year for the Master Deeds data breach. So this was the data breach that had like everyone in South Africa in there, except for some infants. And when I say infants, there were lots of children in there. The only reason some of the infants weren't in there is because the data was aggregated before they were born. I know, crazy, right? Anyway, I reached out to Tifo Mahapi, and he connected with the other guy. And between them, they figured out what the data was. And the data had come from a website called View Finds. And View Finds is a website that does exactly what it sounds like it'll do. You go there to view a traffic infringement fine. So you can go there, you enter, I believe, your email address and your national ID. I think this is just to log back in again. There's probably a registration process where you link it to your car or something like that. I didn't get into that. But effectively, once you're on the website, you can view the fine that is in your system. I'm just going to check, actually, because I'm wondering if it's even still up and running. Now, we located the data, figured out it was from this site. Oh, they've got HTTPS now. Actually, I just saw something else too. One of the things I noticed when I went to the site is there is a site here where you enter your email address and your password, your national ID as well. Incidentally, national ID in South Africa, like social security number in the US, except it has birth date, gender, and I know South Africans are going to probably correct a nuance or something with this, but depending on your age and depending whether you're ID had rolled over or not, it had like how white you were or what your race was. And I think all this changed in like the late 90s. And this is just recalling the discussion from the Master Deeds data breach. So, you know, sensitive stuff in there. At the very least, having your birth date and your gender in the ID, not so cool. So you'd enter this information into the website. One of the first things I noticed, the website has no HTTPS. And I'm like, this is crazy. How can you not have HTTPS? So I actually went and had a look at look to see whether there was even a certificate. There was a certificate from GoDaddy, which was issued early this month. 3 days later, it was revoked. And the revocation reason was cessation of business. Now, I'm not sure whether that was just like a default reason, which is used across many different certificate revocations. I had a chat to Scott Helm about it, who's the guru on all these things. And he sort of said, look, maybe they're still trading. That's just the reason. But it is revoked. So at some point they had a certificate which had only been issued very recently. In the certificate transparency logs, I could not see any other certificates going back any further. So they've basically been running unencrypted. And the amusing thing is, and it's still on viewfinds.co.za right at this moment, second paragraph says, this, I'm going to try and say it seriously. The registration provides you absolute security and access is only allowed by ID and your personal password. No other member of the public can access your outstanding offence information. Except for me and the other guy and the reporter and whoever else has that data now that's been posted into a location where it's going to be shared. So that wasn't real good. In that data was plain text passwords. I have no other way of explaining the fact that that is a very, very terrible thing. Plain text password sent over plain text connections. That the thing that just made me hesitate when I loaded this website now, and I don't know if I just didn't see this before, they've got a different login page. The extension on the website, on the URL, is .asp. So this is like classic ASP. Why are you still running classic ASP in this era? Which really surprises me, which now makes me want to look at the server response headers. IIS 7.5, that is going back quite a way as well, which is probably not so good. Oh, man. Oh, boy. All right. So there's a number of things there that don't look real good. I have actually been in touch with the organization as well. Tifo, the reporter, looped in the guy responsible, and I sort of sent him over some thoughts today about things like certificates. Looks like they've gone back to GoDaddy and got a... Well, you know, this is curious now. They've gone back to GoDaddy and they've got another certificate, and this one is valid from the 27th of July 2015 through to the 23rd of July this year. So they must have had it already. Maybe I just didn't see it in the certificate transparency logs. Or maybe it didn't go in there because it was before GoDaddy was submitting to CT. There's another interesting angle. The whole CT thing is a very interesting angle. I should do a thing with Scott when I'm away. He can talk about that. So anyway, that was all a little bit of a mess. It's gone into Have I Been Pwned. There are 5,000-something Have I Been Pwned subscribers that were in this breach. The passwords that were in this breach as well, a huge proportion of them were in Pwned passwords as well. I can't remember the stats off the top of my head. I tweeted them yesterday. But look, I mean, once there's all plain text passwords, it's very easy to go, look, how many were in Pwned passwords? The next release of Pwned passwords will have all of those in them as well. Plus, it will up the count of all the ones that are already in Pwned passwords but have now been seen again. Might fill in some of those missing PIN numbers as well. So that was view finds. I don't think there's really much more to say on that. Moving on to trying to actually solve some of the problems that we are dealing with at the moment. And actually, to talk about a blog post. I did publish a blog post just last night, my time, about my latest Pluralsight course, which is Bug Bounties for Companies. Now, I recorded this with Casey Ellis when I was over in San Fran, I think early last month, thereabouts. I kind of lose track. No, it would have been before then, because last month was Hawaii. I think it was March, probably March. Anyway, Casey Ellis is a mate of mine I've known for, I actually worked it out, for 5 and a bit years now. And we kind of caught up originally back in Sydney. And he said, look, I've got this idea for a company. I want to build a company which effectively does manage bug bounty programs. And then we will get all the researchers or hackers or whatever we want to call them coordinated. And then companies that want to run bug bounties, these researchers can sort of, you know, triage through us and we'll run the programs for them, etc. Turns out it was a very good idea, and Casey has done very, very well out of it. So they've had a total of about $50 million plus worth of funding now for this idea. They're one of the leading bug bounty management programs out there as well, and they've just done fantastic things. So we wanted to do a course on Pluralsight about bug bounties for companies, because we would love to see more companies using bug bounties. Bug bounties make so much sense for so many reasons. And in the blog post, I sort of explain, you know, one of the interesting hesitations that organizations have about bug bounties is they say, if we run a bug bounty, doesn't that mean people are going to try and hack us? Well, I've got bad news for you. Whether you run a bug bounty or not, people are going to try and hack you. Hacker's going to hack. This is just the way it works. So what bug bounties do is they sort of fundamentally change the ROI of vulnerabilities in systems. And what I mean by that is that for the people that are actively going out trying to find security risks which they can exploit and then potentially monetize, the bounty gives them a legitimate means by going to the organization, getting paid for what they've done. And obviously, if you work within the terms of the bounty program and you disclose it quietly and responsibly and follow all their guidelines, then no harm comes of it and the bounty hunter gets paid, which is good. Bug hunter gets paid. That sounded a bit Star Wars there. So that's fantastic. And the other thing it does with the economies as well is it draws people in, because now there is an incentive to go to the site to look for vulnerabilities, to find them and to report them under this ethical construct, which is a bounty program. So I really, really like the premise of that. And when you think about it, again, from a just a financial metric side of thing, from the side of the organization, you got to sort of say, would it be worth something to you if people told you about security vulnerabilities in your things? And of course, the answer is yes. We know it's yes, because organizations pay for things like penetration tests. This doesn't completely replace that, by the way. That's something else we discuss in the video. So anyway, bug bounties are a fantastic idea. And Casey and I recorded two courses. We did this one, Bug Bounties for Companies. And we did another one we're just wrapping up at the moment, which is Bug Bounties for Researchers. And the second one sort of says, hey, look, if you're someone who is interested in getting involved in bug hunting and you possibly want to make some money out of it, these are some of the things that you can do to get started. So Bug Bounties for Companies is out now. I've also made a comment in there that 1Password has a bug bounty with BugCrowd, Casey's company, where they'll pay you up to $100,000 if you can break into a 1Password keychain. Now, of course, there are all sorts of conditions around this. If you have someone's master password, no, you're not going to get 100 grand. If you find vulnerabilities in their system, you could score yourself a rather large amount of money. Now, think about what that means as well for people like me who use 1Password. I know that there is so much incentive for people to find security vulnerabilities in there that a lot of people would have had a very, very close look at this. You know, imagine the attraction of 100 grand. Imagine the attraction of 100 grand for, say, you or I, and based on my demographics, you are probably in the UK, the US, or another country that has a similar socioeconomic level. Now, imagine the attraction for someone who is in another part of the world where that money stretches a lot, lot further. Maybe you're in Africa or India or Southeast Asia or something like that. And the beauty of these bounty programs is that they just democratize it across the world. So it doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can come and participate in something like the 1Password bug bounty program, and 100K to them is like 400, 500K or something to us. So there are people really, really scrutinizing this. And that gives me a lot more confidence as a user of a service that's running a bounty. So bounties are awesome, and particularly if you're in a position where you'd like to see one in your organization but are having trouble convincing the powers that be that it's a good idea. Imagine how lawyers react to this. I'd hate to be the person explaining it to a lawyer. It'd be hard ask. But that's what this course is designed to do. So go and check that out. We're enormously happy with that one. And the one for researchers will hopefully be along in the coming days. Okay, so I think that is pretty much it. The last thing, of course, sponsor this week is Tech Fabric again. So I have had Tech Fabric there for, I think this is probably about their fourth or fifth week now. So those guys are building platforms in which you can deliver things via cloud using all the new bits and pieces. According to them, scalable, reliable, and secure cloud-native applications. So big thanks to those guys for that sponsorship as well. And that sponsorship model, by the way, just keeps on powering and powering. I completely sold it out for the entire 2018 year before 2017 had finished, and I've had loads of inquiries lately about sponsorship, where I've just had to sort of take names and numbers and I'll get back to you, which probably says I'm not very good at pricing sponsorship. But regardless, as it may be, it works really, really well. And I appreciate everyone who supports the sponsors, as well as, of course, the sponsors themselves, such as Tech Fabric. That's it for this week. If there's anything that people want to hear about in these as well, we had a question from someone last week that Scott and I answered together. If you've got things you'd like me to raise here in this sort of forum, please let me know, because that does make it a little bit more engaging. So drop a comment on my website, on the blog post accompanying this, and I'll try and get to it next week. So thanks very much for watching, guys. Hope you all have an awesome weekend coming, and I'll see you in a week.